Welcome to the APCDA podcast, season four. I'm Ruchira Tripathi, and joining me this year as co-host is Felicity Brown. And together we're going to be talking about career journeys with our guests during this season. Our guest today is Rebecca Wong. Rebecca is a sport and an e-sport psychologist from Malaysia, and she has been working with the national teams for many, many years. Felicity, welcome to the season, and Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
you. So, Rebecca, I want to start with you to give us a little bit of a taster of who you are as a person. So could you introduce yourself to us and to our listeners?
Hello, everyone who are out there listening. I'm Rebecca from Malaysia. I'm as a sports psychologist or e-sports psychologist in profession. I'm in this industry for the 19 years. So this year is going to be like 20 years. I've been telling my interns and my supervisee that I think the passion and the love of working with people, and that is why it keeps me in this industry for so long. I mean, it's not 2 years, it's 20 years. I think it's really long. And I think what really lovely is I'm still loving my job, and I think it keeps counting until perhaps the day that I feel that I can't go anymore. So for now, I don't know. I will keep on doing this job because I enjoy it. I get a lot of job satisfaction from it. So besides that, I'm a mother of two. I'm 48 this year. So I would say that at home, I'm a mom of two. At job, I'm a mom of many others. Yeah, of many teenagers, of many young adults. So I would say that we grow together every day, each and every day. So I learn from them, and they become a better person, a better athlete, better player each day too. So yeah, so it's that basically what I'm doing every day.
So Rebecca, tell us, what were your growing up years like? What do you remember from your childhood? What kind of interests did you have? How did you spend your time?
Yeah, I recall since I was a kid, I was very active and pretty much an extrovert. So we have preschool here, which is like we call kindergarten before we enter the primary school. So I recall that I joined a lot of activities. I sing, I play piano, I dance, I stand on the stage, storytelling, all sort of things that I enjoyed a lot. And I think it's pretty much the same in primary school and secondary school. I was on stage a lot and I enjoy it a lot. Not like being alone, but those things that I join is all in group performance, like orchestra, you know, singing in group, a lot of performance, playing drums, you know, all these things. So I enjoy performance in group, not individual though. I got like a lot of anxiety if I do it alone. And come to, I think in university, so I'm still active in outside classroom activities. So I remember that I was one of the commanders of a leadership camp for university students. So we organize inter-university students for all of the university in Malaysia. And we open to, well, we open to the university students who want to participate. We are the host. So we talk about politics. We talk about a lot of things in the topics during the, if I remember correctly, it's like a four days, 3 nights camp, leadership camp. So we invite politicians at the time to come over to talk about that. And then we have discussion, brainstorming, you know. So it's kind of a bit of like stimulating the youngsters, but we are part of it at the time. I'm still studying, right? Don't know what is going on in the society. Don't really know what are these politicians doing. So it's like a lot of discussion, a lot of brainstorming going on, kind of like getting involved. Okay, we'll be part of it very, very soon. You know, as a part of the young leadership going to, the country needs us, you know, right? Like it's one who's graduate, we are the one going to the inside in the society, so we should care about it. Until I remember that I graduated, and then I picked, oh, so by the way, so I did not plan to a sports psychologist. Okay, not at all. When I was studying Form 6, which we call high school, or you call pre-university, here we call Form 6 after high school. So I really struggled with the double maths, the add maths and additional maths, and also physics. I couldn't really connect to those subjects. So when the offer from university come, which is a diploma in nursing, so I escaped. So I think that time that I took the escape mechanism, and I just packed everything. I told my mom, my parents, like, I'm going. I don't want to study Form 6, you know, the physics and also additional maths. So that's how I started in healthcare line, I guess. So I finished my 3 years in nursing, but I'm not really enjoying to be a nurse, I guess, because the part of the ecosystem at the time where they really, the hierarchy is like they're putting doctors at the top and the nurses are at the bottom in the healthcare industry, which I totally disagree, because I feel like it should be a team, you know, work as a team. And the doctors need the nurse, the nurse definitely need the doctors. It's a team. Why shall the nurses put themselves so low and, you know, putting the doctors higher than them? So I don't enjoy the environment. I can't change the environment. I was just a student. So after 3 years, I applied for nutrition, because unfortunately, when I was doing nursing, I got into the eating disorder. So I started to read more about health. I started to read more about food, you know, read more about like how all these body shape change, hormone and so on and so forth. So I got into crazy into exercise, diet, and try to learn to control my body weight and everything by myself, okay? Because I don't know, I'm supposed to go and ask somebody, or, you know, go see nutritionist or dietitian. I didn't know about that. Yeah, but there's a lecturer to send me to see a psychiatrist. I didn't like the experience at all that time. Yeah, so when I finished my nursing, so I applied to continue to do nutrition. So that was my first choice. I studied very hard. I know I need the good results to get picked up into the undergraduate degree program. So I picked nutrition as a first choice, and fortunately I got into it. That's how I studied nutrition. So I'm also a qualified nutritionist then. Yeah. So that's how my journey is getting slowly really going to healthcare. Yeah, I wanted to be a nutritionist at the time, but the market, like about 20 plus 24 years ago, it was really, really different. Yeah, very different. I guess that time 25 years ago, nobody really know what is nutrition, and nobody really cares about like dietitian, nutritionist. They don't know what are these people doing. And also the job opening at that time is very, very small. So basically they mainly only like the healthcare supplement companies will hire nutritionists at that time. Basically is to run workshops, to deliver talks to the members or to the publics about, you know, taking supplement and healthy eating. So that's all. And the pay not very good at that time. So I was thinking, okay, might as well. Then I tried to look for opportunity to continue study again, since the market for nutrition opening is so low. The salary at the time is below 2,000 ringgit for a graduate. Yeah. So I was looking into studying exercise and stuff like that, because I was thinking, okay, you want to get healthy, it's not just food, you know, and you need to exercise, you need to work out and stuff like that, and you need to get your mind into it. So then that's how I got into sports science. So I did research, and I worked as a research assistant part-time, and at the same time doing my master's, and fund myself and the living, and also for the fees to complete my master degree. Yeah. So basically I worked only after I've done master. And fortunately, I got into the Sport Institute, the National Sport Institute. That's how I really start being a sports psychology practitioner. Yeah. So basically, that's how I, you know, from the kid to growing up and yeah, become who I am today. but not at all. I plan to be a sports psychologist. That not at all. It's just like, you know, things come and then at the same time, opportunity open. And at the same time, I was thinking what's important and what's my interest. Yeah, I would say that throughout the journey, I was really fortunate because I think my parents are very supportive. They, especially my dad, so he did not stop me at all from what I was thinking or wanting to do. Although my mom advised, okay, this job very niche, you might not get a good payment, good income and stuff like that. But I was thinking, I think that's a trend is going. So I see the importance of it. So, and I was really fortunate, you know, job opening. I got research assistant job at the university. All those things, it's just happened. Yeah, it's just happened to put me in the track. So yeah, and shape me into who I am today. Yeah.
Yeah.
So lucky.
Yes, we actually have this thing, and felicity, you would know, is something we call happenstance, which is like how luck plays into, you know, your career. But it's also, I mean, there's so many excellent points that you're talking about. You're talking about how you've taken a step towards your interests and how they have then kind of, you know, morphed into careers that have interested you or, you know, taken you forward. Actually, I had a question about nutrition and sports psychology, because from what I understand, what you study in these two fields are a little bit different. So how did you then get admission into the sports psychology program and master's? Because I thought you need like a psychology bachelor's for it. No, you don't?
Well, yeah, it's supposed to be, but it opened up to sports science graduate as well. So I come from the path from sports science. Okay. And got into sports psychology. They also come from the psychology background and got into sports psychology. So there's two opening that you can either come from both sides. Either one is not complete. Like for example, that's what I'm telling my interns and supervisee right now. So if they are psychology background, so I urge them to do sports science courses to learn about what other sports science is. And then, you know, because psychology is very general. And when you need to specialize, then you need to do master's or PhD. That's where you decide you want to be a child psychologist, you want to be a clinical psychologist, you want to be a criminal psychologist, you want to be an organization psychologist, you know, all sort of specialization. So sports psychology is one of it. And it is not the same as other psychology domain or other psychology element, because it's very niche in sports and exercise. And we know sports athletes, players, they are a small unique community in the public, right? So this community is not big, right? Especially if they represent the country, especially, you know, they play at a very high level, the Olympic Games level. I mean, how many players in the world, what is the real population really play at Olympic Games, right? So it's very niche, it's very small. And that's where it comes to sports psychology itself is also very specific. In the sense of like understanding the daily needs, the job demand, and how to work with all these professionals like coaches and athletes and players in terms of like work as a team and to support a champion. Because, well, for example, In cycling, just giving an example, you have so many cyclists, but you can only have one champion, right? So how to be behind the scene, behind of all these champions, and support the person who is going out there to compete. So it's a lot of thing, players and different people involved in behind the scene in supporting all these people. Yeah. So on the other hand, if like the person who are from sports science background like myself, then we have to do more like enrichment courses, things like that, and to learn more about psychology. So things that I will really ask my intern or supervisor from the sports science background to learn about, like fundamental psychology, you know, psychology skills, mental training, we call cognitive behavioral therapy. You know, all these things are fundamental basic in psychology, but not really in sports science. But someone who from sports science background, but really interested to be a sports psychology and should pick up all this information or causes for enrichment, for self-development. Yeah, which I did as well. Yeah.
So you said that you speak, you work with a lot of professionals to kind of support an athlete. So what are these professionals? So, okay, so if there is a premium athlete, then they would have a psychologist, a physiotherapist, a nutritionist. But who else is there in the team?
So a team basically consists of a coach, athletes or players, okay? And if it's for traditional sports, which is so much more of like physical involvement, so definitely they will have a team doctor, a physiotherapist, masseur, okay? And then we'll have conditioning trainer, which is like in general term, layman term, like physical trainer, nutritionist, psychologist, analyst, physiologist, okay, which is to analyze internal changes when you go into high training load or what happened when you are low training load. So they can trace that where somebody or an athlete is under training or overtrained. So through physiological monitoring and detection. So psychologist is part of the team, the integration team. So I enjoy working in an environment. I think I've mentioned that since my childhood, I love performance and all these things as a group. So I don't deny until today, it never changed. So I enjoy working as a group and integrate discussion, you know, sharing information as a group and to support that one person or to support that one team, you know. Yeah. So I call myself a support staff because among others, we support the coach, we support the players and the team. Yeah. So if it's like in esports, which is much lesser involvement in physical training, but they use a lot of concentration, cognitive, you know, all these things throughout the training hours. So what is really important there will be the psychologist right now is a trend. So we involve a lot of in esports team. Not so much in Asia yet, but in Europe, in North America countries, you would see that almost every esports clubs or teams, they will have a performance psychologist in there. So this is a different term they say that they use is performance coach. So so I think it's just a matter of the name. So, but most of their background is come from masters of psychology or themselves, they were ex-Olympic athlete or ex-athlete before. So they know the importance of, besides the physical, besides the skill and other things is important to perform well, such as eating well, such as sleeping well as well. Yeah, so these are all very important to support the technical training.
I'm interested to know, like, how you made that transition from the sports psychology to the esports. Knowing that that's really niche. You're in a niche area and then you moved to a really niche area. So tell us a little bit about how and why you made that move.
That was really interesting change or switch. So as I mentioned, that I was long, like 15 years involved in the traditional sports in Malaysia before I moved to China, worked with Team China for about like 2 years. And that was during the time where the COVID happened. I went there 2019. And we know early 2020, that's where it happened, the COVID, right? So we were stuck in Beijing and we were all quarantined there. No competition, nothing, no going out, no involvement with outsiders and outsiders are going to come in. That's like for a long 3 months. Yeah. So after 1.5 years about that, so my visa, my passport not going to expire. So I got no choice. I had to come back to Malaysia. And when I come back, well, when you have family, right? at the same time, it's during COVID as well. Everywhere is shut down. The whole world is going very slow. Then you wouldn't feel like going back to, you know, to the overseas working anymore. So I decided to stay back. That's where I open up and spread the news, say that I'm back. So if there's any job opening, please let me know. Any team looking for a psychologist. So it happened so that that time, all the traditional sports, no activities, basically zero activities. But the e-sport industry is going uptrend because everyone's stuck at home, right? And everyone is looking at the computer and looking at the phone, playing games, watching games and all sort of things. So esports is very active at the time. Basically, nothing slowing them down. So because a lot of competitions, they're still going on the online platform. So basically, they continue what they are normally doing. They're just not competing on the stage. So they compete at home and as long as you have internet line. Okay, so I'm back home for like a few months, and then there's a team looking for a sports psychologist. That's how I got in. Interestingly, is that the boss looking for full time, and that's how I started full time with esports. So a little interesting information for you to know that is I previously when I was still at the National Sport Institute with the traditional sports, that's back in 2016, 2017, that's where the sport minister started to introduce esports in the country, you know, saying that it attract a lot of marketing in business and also sponsorships and stuff like that. And they promised that they're going to fork out like 1 million sponsors to the esport industry. So people in the traditional sports side is already like making noise. Why they deserve so much, you know, they got so much support. They sports that they don't even move, you know, so they move their fingers only. This is kind of statement. So yeah, I didn't understand so much as well about like esports at the time, although I participate in one of the forum, but never thought of like I will involve full time in esports a few years later on. Yeah, so I started in esports 2021 after I came back from China until now. So yeah, I would say it really opened up you know, my eye to look at the esport industry. And although I don't support that, you know, being sedentary, I still encourage them to do some, you know, physical activity, be active, be healthy. I understand that they are same, another young group like traditional sports, they have dreams, you know, they like these sports, they like these games, they have dreams, want to be the world champion, they want to be at the top of the world. And that's no different as compared to in the traditional sports where the whole team is working hard towards that mission, towards that target. So yeah, so I would say that I enjoy very much working in the esports scene, and it's just different youngsters that I work with yeah, as compared to traditional sports. So basically that's how I got into esports, that's how I switched. But I did not leave the traditional sports scene. I'm still working with the traditional sports athletes and players on a freelance basis. So like last year, 2 years ago, I still involved in the teams that participate in SEA Games, in Asian Games, and in Commonwealth Games. And this year, I have athletes that are preparing for Olympic Games as well. Yeah.
I saw that on your LinkedIn profile. You are working with the national badminton team. That's super cool. So do you travel with them to the Olympics as well, or do you just prepare them and let them fly?
Well, I think everyone wished to go to Olympic Games, including the support staff. Unfortunately, the passes to go into the games is limited. So for each country, the more athletes that you qualify, you know, then you entitle for more support team or more support staff. So Malaysia being a small country and, you know, every Olympic Games, we have a small team. So that go to the ratio of a support staff also very small. Mm-hmm. So the passes to be given to go there is very, very limited. So I've been to one Olympic Games in 2016. So we are a group of support staff, but outside of the game village, because there's limited pass in the village. So we stay outside and then we go into the games village every day and go to the competition venue to support the team. Yeah. So of course, this year, let's see if I have more athletes and more players to to qualify, then definitely I would be hoping that, yeah, I'd be given a slot. Well, finger crossed.
Fingers crossed, it sounds so interesting.
Yeah.
Rebecca, what do you love most about your job?
I think one thing that I enjoy working with different people, I guess that if you put me in the lab, I would become depressed. So I think I enjoy working with different people, and working with different teams, sports, you know, individual athletes allow me to mix and engage and to work with different people throughout, you know, all these years. And secondly is I like challenges, okay? I like to do something that I haven't done before, try it out and make it successful, and I got all the satisfaction from there. And definitely, I think the thirdly is I grow. I would say that if I'm a sports psychologist, I am a professional. If I work with a coach or athlete, that I'm the one who give and they are the one to take. I take a lot from them too. I learn a lot and I grow a lot from them. I wouldn't say that I would become so open-minded, you know, with the growth mindset, open mindset, flexible and this kind of thing if I wouldn't join this industry. So it wouldn't become who am I today. Yeah. So I would say that I really take a lot from, you know, being a sports side than giving.
So Rebecca, if you think about like the most important career decision or career decisions that you've taken, you've had like a 20-year run, what do you think those are?
Say the people who I call them as my mentor, okay, really, really make a lot of changes in my career. And in fact, life indirectly, because these are the people who open up my mind. You know, I grew up in Malaysia. All my education is done in Malaysia. I did not study in overseas. There is exposures, I would say, that is limited compared to those who got a chance to, you know, to study overseas, to mix around, to go see around and go explore a lot of things. So my environment is limited, but I can't complain. I can't change much because my parents work very hard and there's the maximum that they can give, you know, for us. I have to look for opportunity myself, and the people who I mix around, I have to ask for help, ask questions, things that I don't know. That's where the people I connect with in my early years in my career. So I saw some professors, they come over to give talks and stuff like that. So I connect with them. I email them after that. I ask questions. And these are the people who are, you know, very helpful and very, very enthusiastic because they see someone young who really eager to learn as well. I regard these kind of people as my mentor. So I have mentor on the practical side, applied work. I have mentor in the research side where they give a lot of helping hands. They help me a lot. And getting me to a lot of opportunities as well, including, like currently I'm one of the managing council of International Society of Sports Psychology. So also part of my mentor who, you know, encouraged me to go in, write pitch note to like why I should be in and stuff like that. Yeah, they encouraged me a lot. Even though that time I was like, maybe I shouldn't write, I'm nobody, you know, things like that. Then he's like, keep on reminding me that, Rebecca, have you returned the, you know, your notes and then submission to become the MC member? So he said, don't worry, you will get support. One of the things is like, because I'm a female, I'm Asian. So he said that opportunity is there because they really want to promote inclusion, equality, instead of like, you know, most of the scholars or practitioners or professors come from the Europe and be white men. They say white and men. So they want to look for Asian female. So I say, Rebecca, go ahead, go apply, write, submit and stuff like that. So I say, oh, yeah, okay, I will do it. Because, I mean, when a mentor to follow up with you and asking you that why you have not submit, I mean, what are the reasons anymore that I should not submit, right? So yeah, I said, okay, I will do it immediately. So that's how I got into the ISSP, become one of the MC members. And from there, I continue to get a lot of working collaboration opportunity. Not stopping, it's still counting, it's still going. So yeah, so I really, really appreciate all those opportunities. And that's where I say, I will regard that like meeting the right people, meeting your mentor is really a huge turning point in my career, indirectly my life too. Yeah.
So Rebecca, I mean, you've had such an interesting career. You talked about it, a lot of it today. We're almost out of time, but if I just ask you like a second last question about what is next for you? What do you aspire for now? I mean, do you want to train like the FIFA World Cup team or what are you looking forward to?
Well, I definitely looking forward to more challenges in my career, you know, whatever come out, things that I haven't tried before, I really want to do it. For example, even the esport industry, I'm just here like about 3 years. To me, it's still early, still young. So I would really like to explore more in the esport industry. I mean, one time being a champion and it's not, I mean, it doesn't show anything enough. To me, being consistent, always at the top, that proves that you are at the top. You are that good, you know, if you consistently being at the, like, for example, top 1, 2, 3. Yeah, so that shows that, okay, this is you. I left some legacy there, you know, I bring the team up there from, you know, every year finish 7, 8 and then being at the top 1, 2, 3 all every year. So I want to reach that stage and believe that, okay, I left something in the team. I left a legacy there. So besides that, what I'm right now doing is like, I part-time in some private universities and the psychology degree students. So with the aim to promote sports psychology, because it's this niche area and it's not very like established area. So a lot of students would like to find out more. They would like to know more. They heard about it, but they don't know what it is. So yeah, so I provide the elective paper, applied sports psychology in those universities to inspire more young psychology undergraduates to explore more about the industry. So every season, so each year we have 2 seasons in the competition in esports, for example. So each season I take 2 interns. I accept 2 interns and where they shadow with me throughout like 3-4 months to competitions, to talks, to whatever it is that I do, they follow, they see thoroughly what a sports psychology practitioner would do or can do and practice. And then after that, they can decide whether they want to continue this, you know, pursue this industry or not. So I'm also doing supervision because the accreditation in the ISSP, so I'm one of the qualified supervisor. So I supervise aspiring or graduate masters in sports psychology students. So I supervise them leading up to applying the accreditation. So these are basically what I'm doing besides my work and my practice every day. I wouldn't say that it's already a lot, but I would feel that right now the load, the intensity is okay, you know. So I wouldn't complain what I'm doing right now, too little or too much. I will think that I will continue to do for a couple of years and see how it goes, you know, this career in Malaysia and also in Asia. Yes.
Rebecca, I'm really interested to hear about how mentors have played such a key part of your career. And, you know, I remember you were telling me the earlier part about moving from nursing through to nutrition, and the reason you took nursing even was because you didn't want to do all the maths. And so it was sort of moving away from that, moving nursing sounds okay, but Then you said you developed an eating disorder, which got you with an interest in nutrition. So it's just so interesting, isn't it? How it could be interest, or it could be the disinterest, the thing that we don't like. So we move towards something that leads to that and the next thing for you. And then how key it has been having those mentors. And now it sounds like you're also being a mentor.
Yes. Yes. Well, I wouldn't regret at all, you know, my journey. So what I learned, although I'm not working as a nurse, but what I learned from nursing course is really support me a lot. So I would say today, I'm not just a sports psychology support staff. I'm more like a comprehensive support staff where, I mean, I'm there. I understand about like sickness, illness, as a basic nursing care, bandage, you know, things like that. I know about nutrition, you know, eat well, support your health for competition, for performance, and not just mental. So I really appreciate that my path, you know, I did not plan it, but what I've gone through is supporting me to be an even more comprehensive support. Yeah, be part of the support team.
Yeah. Even the extracurriculars that you did, I mean, they are all kind of coming together. All those leadership camps and, you know, those other engagements with people that you were doing, the role that you are actually doing right now, which is a freelance or, you know, working with other people. I think those skills that you developed all those years ago, they are kind of coming in now.
Yeah,
so it's
definitely.
Actually very interesting if you kind of stand here and look back of how you kind of journeyed this path and ended up here.
Definitely. While you were saying summarizing this, I'm actually thinking, yeah, my kids should listen to this as well, because they never heard from the mom had been talking a lot to other people, mom hadn't told us, you know. So yeah, I think it worth that this recording that I make my kids to listen to as well.
Yeah, it's amazing how things all come together, and when you look back it makes sense, doesn't it?
Yes, so much so.
So do you have any motto or any special saying that you live your life by?
I have a feel, but definitely one that I apply in my life and also in my job is walk the talk. I seriously believe that if something that we cannot do, we don't have the right to ask people to do it. For example, being on time, for example, being disciplined, for example, respectful, you know, integrating with people, good communication. I'm not saying that I'm perfect, you know, even though like 20 years in the industry, I'm still human being. I also have emotions, and sometimes my emotion intelligence is gone very bad. But I would say that it's become a motto that guiding me, telling me that okay, this is important. Try to be walk the talk as much as possible, to be a role model, to show the youngsters in the team. They are young, you know. They wouldn't be so much already master in emotion control and other things compared to the older ones. But I'm still not saying that the old ones is perfect. But recall my age of 20-ish, you know, early 20s, I was bad in controlling my emotions, you know. So I feel that I should be the role model and showing them in front of them that you can control your emotion better. You know, it's a choice, and it's an awareness. Whether we allowed it to just over cover everything, our rational is a choice. And I feel that they need a lot of like senior people, like support staff or the manager who show them, you know, on daily basis. Because talk is like, everybody can talk on a paper. Everybody can write perfect essay, good essay, but I still believe doers, you know, the person who execute and to do it is the most difficult part. And after doing, being consistent is another challenges. So so my motto is like, it's not just one time. You've got to be consistent. You've got to execute consistently. So that will really help us to become a better person. Yeah.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you so much for sharing your journey and your stories with us. It was so exciting, and for letting us, you know, for this short duration journey with you in your past and experience it as well. So thank you very
welcome.
Much.
You guys are so welcome. I enjoy the short 1 hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.